and City Council work session tonight, July 10th, 2006. And we just have one item that we wanted to talk about. It has to do with the Partners in Friendship. Really, we call it presentation. There'll be a couple of us doing a little bit of talking. I'm going to lead into it a little bit, and then George Custodi will talk, and Dave Sigelman. George is the chairperson of Partners in Friendship, which I think everybody's familiar with what that organization is. They were responsible for our Partners in Friendship ties with Orvieto, Italy, and of course still are, and that's been going strong. David is with Washington Group International, and he's the contact, lack of a better word, short words, I guess, with our Russian friends, and that's what we're talking about in the next few minutes. There's a delegation from Russia that's coming over to Aiken in August, and let me give you a couple of thoughts here, and then I'll let them speak. This has to do with the group that's coming over, and we've been talking about it off and on since about November of 2005. And the city in Russia, where we'll have six folks coming over, they're not engineers like normally that have come over and met at the plant, and I've had the honor of meeting some of those, but this is a group of some political folks and head of economics and those kind of things. And the reason that we're into this, the Department of Energy was very interested in bringing this group over and sharing their time with the city and let them get to meet us and us to meet them, and we'll have some new friends. And Siversk is the town in Russia, and it's a closed city. It's a nuclear city. And it is the place that the MOX fuel facility hopefully will be built. And, of course, that coincides with the Savannah River plant here near Aiken. And so that's another reason to try to get some friendship going and learn a little bit about their ways, and they learn from us, and they've got some economic situations over there too, and perhaps they can learn some things from us and we can learn from them too. So that's all I'll say right now. I'd like to ask George if he would say a few words. And by the way, PIF is leading this. We're partners with them, of course, the city is. And of course, WGI, Washington Group International, is a very important part of this as well. They've made contacts. They are the contact with our Russians, and they're supporting, financially supporting this venture for the most part. Go ahead. George Custodi.
Thank you, Fred. My name is George Custodi, and I'm president of Partners in Friendship, and we have been doing this kind of thing for about 10 years with the city of Orvieto, as the mayor indicated. And when Mayor Kavanaugh called me about 6 or 7 months ago and said, would you like to be involved in a partnership relationship with the city of Siversk, Russia, I kind of was a little bit... I didn't know what to say, really, because we really weren't looking for any other partners. We had a pretty good run with the city of Orvieto and Shoalhaven. But we talked, the idea developed, and it has come a long way since we talked. And we're now preparing to welcome the delegation from Siversk in August. And I will not tell you what the strategic reasons for this are. I will let David Ziegelman from the Savannah Riverside tell you about that. But our part will be to show the Russian guests Aiken, to develop some relationships, to show what life is like in a small city in the south. It'll be the middle of August, so they certainly will get their fair share of the hot temperatures. But we've got a very, what I think is a very comprehensive schedule. There is a press release that we're releasing to the press tonight and to the city council that pretty much outlines the whole program. So I won't get into a lot of details, but we're excited about it, and we think that this will give the citizens of Aiken another opportunity to interact with another culture in a far and distant place, namely Siberia. And as David was telling me, you know, if we have to go to visit them, we hope it's not going to be in January, because I understand Siberia is quite cold in January. Fred, I hope you have some long underwear. I will answer any questions if there are any questions, and if not, I'll turn it over to David to give you the strategic reasons behind why we're doing this.
Does anyone have any questions they'd like to ask? Okay.
Thank you.
David?
Yeah.
Good afternoon. My name is David Ziegelman. I manage a non-proliferation program at the Savannah River site on behalf of the U.S. Department of Energy. The program is something called the Nuclear Cities Initiative. On again, off again, we appear in the local and the national press. The purpose of the program is to help the Russians downsize their nuclear weapons complex and help them create commercial sector employment opportunities for their engineers and scientists that are displaced because of funding limitations. It's DOE in the United States revisited 6,000 miles away. For the past several years, the Savannah River site's been heavily involved with a city called Sadov, and there have been several delegations visiting here, and the mayor has been kind enough to participate in several of those meetings. We're now turning our attention to the city of Siversk, which is four time zones east of Moscow, if you can believe that. It's 12 hours ahead of us. And we're turning our attention there because they're going to be shut down a reactor that provides heat and steam to the city, and oh, by the way, still makes plutonium. And we're going to help them. We want to help them create commercial sector jobs for the displaced scientists and engineers. And at the request of DOE headquarters, we were asked to see if Savannah River could find a local community that would be interested in entering into a partner city relationship. Because the feeling was, with a partner city relationship between the city of Siversk and a town or a city in our area, that would develop a closer relationship between our two cities and our two nuclear facilities. So the delegation coming here with the support of my parent company, Washington Group International, the mayor, and PIF, provides us an opportunity to learn more about the people from Siversk, show them a little bit about how we've done things to mitigate the economic impact on the area of downsizing at the Savannah River site, and kind of become buds, if I can use a northern term or even a southern term, so we can proceed on our non-proliferation programs while being a good partner to another city in Russia. Any questions?
Hey, we might just add the types of people that are coming.
Oh, okay. We have a regional vice governor, closest akin to a lieutenant governor of a state. We have a deputy mayor of the city of Siversk. We have a deputy director of the scientific institute that runs the nuclear facility. We have an economic diversification person from the city administration. We have a lecturer from the local technical university. And the head of the city administration, I guess it's the Roger LeDuc of Siversk. Probably is not the same, not a fair comparison problem.
Did you tell us, though, that they wanted to change places for a while?
I think that's part of the program.
In the winter time.
Yes, especially.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't send you guys to Siversk. It gets to be 30, 40 degrees below zero centigrade. When you get that low, there's no difference between centigrade and Fahrenheit. It hurts.
Now, one thing here, we've agreed so far to have this trip, them come here, and then we'd have a delegation go there, right?
Right.
And as of right now, that's probably, that's all.
That's what's on the horizon, and then we have to take things from there. Right?
So whether it goes on or how long it goes on or whatever would be up in the air. We'll talk a little bit about that perhaps the last day they're here, if we have a chance.
And I think the city and PIF has done an excellent job putting together their part of the program, because there'll be a Savannah Riverside part of the program on a couple of days. They're coming here for a week. There'll be a Savannah Riverside program, which is, I call it the official program, and then there's the city PIF part of the program, which is the Partner Cities program. And the people at DOE headquarters in Washington have gotten so excited that I invited four people to come now for my program, and they've invited them to the mayor's dinner. They've invited themselves to the mayor's dinner, but I think that's a good sign rather than being a negative, so we laugh about it.
I think it is, too.
Another unfunded mandate, George. Thank you.
On a Wednesday of that week, it starts August 12th, the Saturday they come in. On Wednesday, the city is hosting what's called the official welcoming reception and dinner. And everybody's invited, and spouses as well.
You want to give that date again?
And that happens to be the 16th, that Wednesday, but Saturday the 12th is when they come in over in Augusta in the evening. And several of us will go over and meet them. What we talked about in our planning group is that we really want to show them a old Southern meal. So who was it that suggested public safety and the sheriff's department cooking? Okay. Well, that's what's going to happen. They've agreed they're going to be cooking that meal that night downstairs. That's where we're going to meet. And just have everything that goes with barbecue and fried chicken and fried catfish.
And roadkill.
But we'll start sending out invitations probably tomorrow or the next day. And as you said, David, we had a list our last meeting of 60 people, and it's probably grown to 70 now. But then some won't be able to come for various reasons. But that's going to be an exciting time, I think.
May I be remiss in not thanking you and PIF for your cooperation and support of this effort?
Well, you're certainly welcome. We want to, one of our goals, if not the number one goal each year we've had for years, certainly in the top 10, is the support of the Savannah River site in any way that we could support. The good missions. Obviously, we wouldn't support those things that we don't feel that are good or safe or whatever. But so there are a lot of things that are done throughout the year by various council members or hearings or whatever, going to Washington once a year. And so this is just another opportunity, really, that we have to show our support for the community. And believe me, they recognize that Aiken has the best support of any site in the country. We know that, but the top people have said that many times. So, David, thank you for what you're doing and have done on this, and George too.
And is the Washington group absorbing most of the expense for this, or how is this going to be funded?
Yeah.
Like I said, there were two programs. There is a DOE-funded program, and which is the official quote-unquote program, and the partner city activities are being funded by my corporation, Washington Group. So there's DOE money and there's Washington Group money.
Thank you. And the city's just responsible for the dinner and things.
Jane, there may be some little bit of contingency money that can be taken out of the contingency for public safety. Pete has said that he could do that on some of the things having to do with the dinner. And also, I'm not speaking for the sheriff, but I don't know that for sure. But Pete had said maybe the sheriff, too. But,
okay, good.
It won't be much. So
we got a little creative. And Washington, D.C. wanted us to do it so badly that they agreed with the approach. It's a rather unusual way to fund it, but everyone kind of chipped in, and it's working out.
Well, thank you two gentlemen very much. Appreciate what you've done. And look forward to the future here. And the next meeting is planning meetings Wednesday, I think. Okay. You can stay for the rest of the meeting if you'd like. If you don't have anything else to do.
Okay.
you've got something else to do. Okay, let's go right into our regular meeting now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Aiken City Council meeting, July 10th, 2006. And if you care to stand with us for our prayer and our pledge, please do so.
May we pray. Heavenly Father, as we look to you tonight, we just come to you, Father, with a heart full of thanksgiving for all the many blessings that you have given to us in this wonderful city, Lord. Father, we thank you for the citizens that you have given to us and their willingness, Lord, to work together to accomplish things for the good of our city. We thank you for our mayor and, Lord, for our council members. And we pray that you'll be with each one of us tonight. Father, that you will guide our minds. Father, may we have clarity of thought. Father, help us to do what's right in your sight and what's right for the city in which we represent. Father, we'll be careful to give you the praise, the honor, and glory for all this accomplished. And we ask these things in him whose name is above all names. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to the agenda this evening?
I would like to ask Council's permission to discuss three items at the very end of the thing. Council's meeting, I think it'll be a short meeting, so we should have time. One is a resolution which I have been passing around that we want to send up to Washington to our Congress and Senators that are up there concerning transportation projects. Another is a report from Bernadette Clayton, who is representing the Aiken Training Track, which just got approval Thursday evening on tearing down some barns. We'd like to talk to Council about that briefly. And last of all, in early June meeting, our city attorney gave us a memorandum on the subdividing of properties and what we can do and can't do. Currently, Mr. Evans approves all subdivision of properties. We had a request come through us today that instead of just going through the Planning Commission or City Council, could we at least post them for a while? And we'd like to get Council's direction on that. What you'd like to possibly do with that. That came from Jane Page Thompson earlier.
Okay. All right. Anything else? If not, do we have a motion and second?
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve the agenda with the additions.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. First item is the minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the work session and regular meeting of June 26, 2006.
Move for approval, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under old business, first item is appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. We have one appointment here, and that's Councilman Price has recommended Andrew Bognight to the Building Code Appeals Committee, and this is a reappointment. And just for your information, we do have a issue that is going to be coming up before the committee probably this next month that we just had come before us this week. So,
you know what date next month?
That the committee will be meeting,
is
Bill?
Is it before our first meeting?
We have not set a date yet, I don't think.
Okay. Okay, so that's just the one. We've got the one.
Just have the one appointment for tonight.
Yeah. Okay, do we have a motion on that?
I move for approval, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'll
second, Mayor.
We got a second. Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please.
passes unanimously. Item 2, second reading public hearing of an ordinance designating Pine Lawn Cemetery as a landmark. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title. It's an ordinance designating Pine Lawn Cemetery to the Aiken Historic Register as a historic site with landmark status. We're all familiar with the Pine Lawn Cemetery. It's located on Hampton Avenue at Lancaster. There's been a committee working on this. Actually, there's been various committees working on this over the last number of years. But they have presented to the city a request that it be designated as a landmark. As a landmark, it could be a conforming, non-conforming status, depending on the significance of it and its significance in our history and the fact that it has a number of prominent citizens from the African American community and others who are currently buried there. The Planning Commission and the Design Review Board both unanimously recommended the approval of designating the Pine Lawn Cemetery to the Aiken Historic Register as a landmark, which is the highest designation you could possibly have. With this designation, there would possibly be the ability to obtain grants for further work on it. The city has set aside $170,000 to do landscaping and fencing around the cemetery and to do some internal road work. So before you tonight is an ordinance that you approved on first reading at your June 26th meeting, and this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to designate the Pine Lawn Cemetery to the Aiken Historic Register with a landmark status.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading public hearing of this ordinance. And is anyone here that would like to speak on this issue? You may certainly do so. And I see we have someone that would like to.
Two someone.
Colleen Reed, 207 Brandon Road, Aiken. Mr. Mayor, council members, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm hoping that this is approved tonight with landmark status. You mentioned that there are some groups that have worked together to make this application and do some work on the cemetery all possible. The groups were the Aiken Visionaries, the Schofield Community Association, and the Northside Heritage Preservation Foundation. In your packet, I would like you to note that Andrew Chandler, the architectural historian from the State Historic Preservation Office, approved the preliminary information form and recommended that work continue to nominate the property to the National Historic Register. And just as a little sidebar, the proper name of the cemetery is Pine Lawn Memorial Gardens. The common name is Pine Lawn Cemetery. And Mr. Hallie Holland is the new president of Pine Lawn Memorial Gardens, and I'll let him speak.
Thank you. My name is James Hallie Holland. I live at 328 Newberry Street Northwest, and I'd like to solicit your support in what we are trying to do as far as making the Pine Lawn Memorial Pine Lawn Memorial Gardens a historic point here in the City of Aiken. Our ultimate goal is to put it on the historic register. We think that it is a site that has significant historical significance to Aiken and the African American community especially. We'd like to see it preserved for ourselves and our posterity, and we think this is a way to ensure that that does happen. So thank you for your support.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Colleen. Where did she go? There she is. Thank you both for all the work you've done. We know how much work you've done, believe me. And you've done work on other things, too, as well. So we appreciate that. And this is going to be a great improvement in that area and to that cemetery, to the garden, excuse me. And anyone else like to speak? If not, it's back to the council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
It is indeed a pleasure to make the motion to approve this designation of Pine Lawn Memorial Gardens to the Aiken Historic Register as a historic site with landmark status, and I so move.
Okay.
Mayor, I second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, all in favor.
Okay, great.
Passes unanimously. And thank you again for all your work. And there's a lot more work ahead, isn't there?
Yes, it is.
Well, we certainly support that any way we can. Item 3, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 3612 Richland Avenue West as general business. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of 0.6 acres of land, more or less, owned by Jamie Johnson, and is owned the same general business. It is their intent to take this piece of property that's along Richland Avenue and to bring it into the city. There are some conditions that were recommended by the Planning Commission that, number one, there would be no curb cut allowed from Richland Avenue. Currently, there's a unpaved street called Keith that, in working with the county, they said that if it could be paved, that is what they are asking, and the entrance would come off of Keith, which already has an entrance into Richland Avenue. I know the mayor asked last time, how would you get to the property if you don't have a curb cut off? And so they have worked that out and asked that Keith be paved, that all of it be paved in this particular area. The property owner would not need to prepare a traffic study as long as no more than 2,000 cars per day go into the site, that they would stub out from the site to the motel. That does not mean that necessarily there would be a direct connection, but at least a stub out would be there should we be able to connect it sometime in the future. Annexation would not take place until the property is purchased by the contract purchaser and they sign an agreement with the city listing all the conditions that we just discussed, that all new wiring to the site would be underground and the conditions would be met by the end of this year. This was approved at the last meeting, first reading. This is second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 3612 Richland Avenue West under the general business zone.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone in the audience would like to speak to this issue, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve this second reading.
Okay, I'll second it. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I have just one question. Sure. And I guess it's really for Gary Smith. And that's, we would record that they limit the total number of new vehicle trips by all uses to no more than 2,000 per day. How on earth would that ever be monitored?
Maybe I can answer that. Currently, they're proposing to put something in there that would have very few trips, and I believe that was going to be a car wash. Mm-hmm. If they decide to put something in there, let's say it's going to be a fast food restaurant.
Okay,
and therefore, when they brought the building permit in, we saw that this fast food restaurant, because once you zone it as general business, just because they say there's a car wash going there doesn't mean a car wash would go. And all we'd be asking at that time is if something went in there that's going to be over 2,000 trips. And then we need a traffic study to see how this would affect Keith and then Richland Avenue.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Mr. Smith.
I know.
Gee, why do we need you then?
You're almost redundant.
Okay, does that answer your question, Dick?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, sir. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay. Item 4, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 1714 Two Notch Road Southeast and zone as residential RS-10. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title. It's an ordinance to annex to this corporate limits of the city of Aiken certain property consisting of 0.27 acres of land, more or less, owned by Thomas and Evelyn Sellers and located at 1714 Two Notch Road Southeast and zone the same residential single-family RS-10. This property is surrounded by other RS-10, RS-8 zone. It does meet the lot requirements for an RS-10. The Planning Commission unanimously approved this for annexation so that they could at some point in time receive more city services. You did approve this at your first reading, and this is second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 1714 Two Notch Road under the RS-10 zoning.
Thank you, sir. And this is second reading public hearing of this ordinance. If anyone wants to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move for approval of this annexation as a as an RS-10 residential single-family unit.
Okay. Do we have a second?
My second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Under new business, item one, first reading of an ordinance to annex property of Wild Haven, Drive East of Banks Mill Road. Mr. LeDuc.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken, certain property owned by Metro Homesites, LLC, and to zone the same planned residential. At the last couple of meetings we've had, we completed the annexation of an adjoining piece of property that was going to be for single-family homes. You asked at the last meeting when Mr. Cole came before you that Mr. Evans would meet with him and determine what areas they could agree upon, since the Planning Commission is currently been working on a new ordinance involving attached single-family homes. To go back a little bit of history, in year 2000, City Council approved water and sewer for the site with the condition that when the site became contiguous to the city, that they would submit an application for annexation. Now, council could accept that annexation, or they could refuse to annex this property. If they refused to annex the property, they would still receive city water and sewer, except they would then go ahead and build under whatever county standards were available. When Mr. Evans met with Mr. Kroll, they discussed a number of areas of, again, a set of regulations that the Planning Commission is still discussing. They have not finalized this, and once they finalize it, it's still got to come before City Council, and you have to finalize it. So there could be several different changes that may be made by the time this becomes law for attached single family. With that in mind, it appears that Mr. Evans and Mr. Kroll were able to come to agreement on several areas. The few areas that they were not able to come to agreement on involved if you look at a section of attached homes, typically what you've seen in Aiken is the front of them all line up in a row. One of the considerations that the Planning Commission is considering right now is that there would be a variance in the distance that the front of those homes would be to the adjoining street. So some might be forward, some might be back a little bit, so you'd back and forth. Same thing with the roof line, you'd have a little bit of variation. They're also looking at no more than three of them in a row. There are several different reasons as far as what this company has looked at in the marketplace as to what they would like to have to meet. And those are some of the things that they felt that they could not agree to. But everything as far as landscaping and the driveways and the streets, actually moving the section of these homes, some of the units forward, some back further from the road, they're agreeing to that. Each different set. So they have agreed to most everything except these three different areas, which again, we don't know at this point in time if that's something council's going to even agree with. So we felt that they did make good faith effort, and we'll bring this back to you for consideration. With this approval, there are a few conditions. All these they have agreed to, that the City Council would approve the elevation of the multifamily residential buildings. Those are attached for your review. The revised concept plan addresses the conditions on the approval be submitted to the planning director prior to a CO for any homes, and this goes for the attached or the detached homes. They have to go ahead and complete the work on Banks Mill Road and on Wild Haven Drive to Banks Mill Road, which is adding an additional lane. And that these agreements would have to be recorded at the RMC office. So for your consideration tonight, I know that the developers here, and so is Ed, if you have any questions, is the first reading of an ordinance to annex Tract A north of Wildhaven Drive into the City of Aiken under the PR zone. And upon your consideration, a second reading public hearing would be held the next meeting, which is currently scheduled for the second Monday in August.
Excuse me. Okay. Thank you, Roger. Do we have a motion?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this on first reading, just so we can have some discussions, I guess.
Okay, I'll second that. I also like to say appreciate the developer working with us in a situation when they really wouldn't have to. And we appreciate that very much, because it'll make for a better development anyway. Okay, any other comments?
Well, can we talk about the design standards they can't comply with at this point?
Certainly. Roger, would you like... Okay, Les. Tell us your name and...
Hi, John.
Just John.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just for the record there. Could you address those things which give you a problem, as Ms. Waters has asked?
The memo from Roger, is that what we're talking about, the ones that will not be met?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm assuming the first one, the street layout and off-street parking, that's the reference to the median in the middle of the road. Is that that is?
Ed, I wonder.
Right, that's the one.
You and Ed talked.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Ed could help a little bit. Can you help Ed?
on the page, the page after the memo, that is the one with the landscape median and the road, and that is it would just be a big expense to us that would significantly increase the home price. And as I said, the last meeting, we're really trying to get some affordable housing to the residents of Aiken. And a lot of these things that Ed and I talked about, that what we could and couldn't do, really would just increase the price of the home to pretty significantly, to where we're pricing some of the folks that we're looking to sell to out of the market. I know the types of homes that we're talking about are very similar to the ones that are behind the Aiken Mall. Before I came to the meeting, I rode through the neighborhood back there, and there's three homes for sale. There's three for sale signs in the neighborhood, one of which has already been sold. I also looked at the past listings for the past year in the Aiken MLS, as far as homes that were for sale that were represented by agents. And the days that they were on the market were anywhere from zero, which would be a pre-sale, to 50 days, which we're talking about less than 3 months. And I feel like there's a demand for this type of housing in the city. And based on some of my research, I think there is a great demand for it. There's hardly any for sale in that particular neighborhood, and I think some of these regulations that y'all are speaking about would make the building more expensive, the particular home more expensive than some of the folks that want to buy them could afford.
Right. If I read this, and of course I don't know, there seem to be two items here, basically, that you said you couldn't agree to because of the cost, I guess, and that's the facade. A change in facade as you go down the street, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And also a roof line. I'm assuming it's the elevation maybe of the roof line or the shape of the roof.
Well, the roof pitch and the breaking up of the roof line.
Right.
Would increase the cost of the building.
But one thing you did agree to was not having them lined up in a straight line.
That's
correct.
In other
words, have a little distance, a little bit of difference between
buildings.
Right.
How big is a cluster? How many homes?
The max would be four.
Four would be the max number in a
four
cluster?
Four to a building would be the most we would do.
Then how much space in between?
I'm not sure of the 15 feet.
15 feet.
And we could, adjust them back, 2 to 4 feet. We could move this one up two and move that one back two, and then you'd have...
Now, the one in Target's, do they have any separation at all? I don't recall that they do. They just one straight line.
It's
one straight line.
So each unit would be still one facade, if you will. One.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But you're saying that you could actually vary those setbacks a little bit to at least get away from this barracks-like look that you've got behind the mall.
Yes, sir. I did not develop the ones behind the mall. I'm just saying that's the type of houses we want to do.
Okay, but in terms of the home itself,
yes, sir.
But you could give variety to, and will give variety as far as the setbacks.
Yes, sir.
When you build a building like this, I mean, there are firewalls between each unit then. Is that how you
do
it?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You said that you could do landscaping and buffers. What are you thinking of in that?
And some of the design, the new regulations, it speaks of shrubbery in between each driveway, and we could probably do that anyways if it wasn't a regulation. But I think that not doing some of these things that I'm asking not to do would give us a little leeway in adding some more landscaping to the development. And I did. I gave Ed a landscaping plan of what we were planning to do around the whole neighborhood, which I actually have with me if you want to look at.
So that would be around the entire project?
Around the entire project. I don't have any type of drawing what we would do for each individual house, but I do have.
Have you got something that's fairly large we can... Now, when we speak of landscaping, and I assume will it be the smallest that you can get, or will it be kind of a medium?
Well, I do have. I think we have the.
Put it right here.
I have the height and the gallons amount of plants on there.
Bring it right here.
So. Oh, there's some trees in there too as well.
Yes, we're around the hole.
And you said you could do the roof line to be the pitch. To be very close to what we would like,
yes,
couldn't
ma'am.
You?
That yes, I believe it's a. I think it's a 6-12 instead of a 7-12.
And that's larger than, steeper than what you had planned.
Well, we haven't drawn the plans. We haven't drawn the home plans yet because after the first meeting, we really didn't know what we were going to be able to do or not do. So we haven't drawn any plans for that reason. So I don't know what our roof pitch would have been, but. It will be a 6-12.
So even though you have not drawn the plans, it still is going to cost more per home to build, not knowing.
Well, we're basing it on what the home, the mall sold for, and then kind of crunching some numbers, figuring out what would be the change from that type of unit to what these new regulations would require.
John, is this the total
just for Wild Haven Drive?
Oh, is this just for Wild Haven Drive?
We're talking the total number of plants that you've got up there. The quantity runs roughly about 80 36, 64, 75, 81. Total of 81 blanks.
That's down here.
Yeah, but I don't think some of these are in the key. But it would be somewhere.
For instance, here's six. Here are the live oaks.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So these are just on Wild Haven. That's not going back into the development at all.
Right. This is just around. This what I have is just around the exterior.
Just for one street.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not stuff on the
These are not the numbers that will be.
Oh, okay.
Will be
that's
I don't have a drawing.
You don't even have an idea of that. Yeah. But that certainly helps a little bit to have those, even in terms of sales.
Yes, we have one here. My question has to do with the way the units themselves look. Once all of them are finished, I don't know how you can do the facade, but isn't there something you can do every two units, even if it's four per cluster, every two units maybe to break it up and make it look individual? I mean, is that going to cost that much extra to change the facade on unit number one and unit number three and maybe unit number two and unit number four in each cluster? Even though you're dropping them back 2 feet and bringing one up to get that 4 feet distance there.
I'm really not sure what...
Are they going to all be painted just alike or the front?
There will be vinyl siding. They will not be painted.
Be the same color, though?
They're going to be all the same color?
Can you vary that?
I don't know. I don't know if we can vary the colors of the building. I feel like we could. You mean having four different, two different colors out of the four buildings or something like that?
Yeah. I just mean just to make them look a little different so that all four of them won't look exactly alike, just one drop back and the other one not drop back.
Right.
It's hard for me to judge what you're going to do without a picture,
right.
And it's hard for you to know what I'm talking about without a picture.
Right.
So I guess by the time we have the second reading, we'll have a little bit more information if we have a second reading.
You know, the pictures that we submitted for the type of homes behind the mall is that we're trying to duplicate those homes.
Okay.
So I don't think it would be a dramatic difference between home to home. Now we could probably vary the color between building to building, but I'm not sure if we could do it from home to home. I'm not real sure how that would look too.
Well, even if you could do it between four and four, you know, this four is
that's what I mean.
One color and this one a little bit darker or something.
Each building, we could change the color of the siding, but I'm not sure how it would look if we changed the color inside the building. I don't think that would be the best looking.
Well, it might not be.
You know, I've seen them where some are vinyl, some have vinyl siding, and the others have vinyl siding, but they're just the fronts of the buildings just look differently. Sometimes the bricks come up a little further. Sometimes the doors on the left and the. I don't know. I just would like to see a picture where they don't all look exactly alike. I think the term for that is cookie cutter.
Right.
And I think as long as we could vary them, I think going to dropping some back and bringing some up is a step in the right direction. And I'm asking for a little bit more different design on the facade than just dropping them back and putting one up.
Yeah. Again, I'm not sure how if varying the facade, varying the colors of brick. Well, they won't, not the brick, but the varying colors of the vinyl siding. I don't think that's going to look very good.
Well, I don't think so either. But I think there are some things you can do to a facade of a
right.
cluster to make all four of them or all eight of them or all however many you're doing look exactly alike.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I'm asking you to look at when you do your drawings.
Okay. I will certainly look at it, but I mean, the homes are going to look alike. I mean, I don't think there's any way around that. I mean, we're trying to do some affordable basic housing for people in Aiken, and when you're trying to do that, it's very difficult to do a custom house like that. I mean, it's there is some expense to bear with that, and we have to pass that along to the end user.
What's the price range going to be?
I think based on the ones behind the mall, we're looking probably, we're going to try to get it to around 100 or under.
That's our 100?
100,000 or under is what we're going to,
yeah, or
we're
under,
trying,
yeah,
to do. And some of these things would be, you know, some of the conditions that we just can't do could add $500 to $7,500 to the price of a home. Well, for a $100,000 house, $7,500 is a pretty significant increase. I mean, if you're talking about a much more expensive house, that's not a big increase. But when you're trying to get it down to where it's affordable, it's just too big of an increase, and you price a lot of people out of the market who want to buy these types of homes.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I think we've all heard a lot of complaints about the looks of the housing behind the mall. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're asking so many questions, because they may sell, but people have really complained about the looks of that project. And I would hope that you could make good money and have a better looking project that would sell even better. I would think that four units that are separated by 15 feet, and some are forward and some are back, and maybe there's, I think that would look better, frankly. And you drove down there, there's hardly room for a tree. I mean, you know what I'm saying, in that front where there's that line, that relentless line that goes on.
They do have a lot of landscaping in the front yards of those things, and it does break up the buildings rather well. The folks living there need somewhere to live, and they're not complaining about their house. I mean, I think they're very happy with owning a house opposed to renting a house. And like I said before, there is a demand for this type of housing. The sales of the homes have shown that.
Well, we just want to be sure that we also know that, and I don't have a problem with having some lower priced housing in the city of Aiken, goodness knows. But we also know that on houses of this price, that they don't the taxes on them really don't pay for the city services that we have to provide.
Mm-hmm.
And if the city, I mean, therefore, I think since the citizens of Aiken are going to have to make up this difference for quite a while, that it's kind of our obligation to try to see that this is as attractive as it can be. And I don't think it'll do anything but good for you. I mean, I'm not looking to sabotage your project. I think you can do better and better. It looks better and better.
I'm not sure what the numbers are as far as taxes and revenue to the city. You already have, I mean, I don't know how to figure this, but you already have two neighborhoods that are already in the city right next to it. So I don't know what kind of, I mean, you're already providing services as far as police and fire protection to the neighborhoods right next door. I don't know what kind of offset you would have because of that either, but like I said, that's...
Yeah, I don't think any of us know that right now. You'd have to look at the details of it and the cost of putting the lines in and what have you, and the cost of public safety, and how many units you've got out there that are paying that tax.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
The thing that gets to me about this is, number one, is apparently we've already agreed to provide water and sewer to this facility. Number one. Number two, it's going to be built, whether it's going to be built in the city or in the county. It could be built in the county with less guidelines than he's offering to do now. I'd just like to thank Mr. Crowell for coming forward and being willing to sit down and try to meet as many of these guidelines as he possibly could. And I think that, you know, if we were going to try to enforce all the guidelines that are going to be set forth in this upcoming legislation, and you know, we're already having agreed to provide water and sewer to this facility, you know, we're already lost on that part. So I'd just like to thank you for coming forward and for being willing to sit down and work with Ed Evans and being willing to compromise on some of the things that you had set forth, and willing to meet us part the way. And thank you. Thank you for that. I think the facility, by having the 15-foot in between the four units, is going to be a huge improvement over what we see back behind the Aiken Mall.
I think the variation also.
Yeah, the variation in the facade.
And I do believe that each cluster, perhaps color-toned differently, is good. I agree with you, though. I think you can't take one cluster and try to even divide where the paint's going to, where the color's going to go. It's not a natural look.
I wouldn't think that would cost any more money either, whether you have a light tan or a darker tan. And then you go back to light tan and maybe darker tan.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, that
change in all
We can vary the colors of each building. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, that'd be good.
It won't be hard. It won't look right. Could you have some drawings by the next meeting of what the four-unit cluster might look like?
I think so. I can't guarantee that. Because, again, I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to be able to build. So it's kind of. But I think I could probably have my guys come up with some type of sketch, I think.
We're apparently using as a model those that are behind Target.
Right. Because, again, the neighborhood has been very successful. There are hard, like I said, there's only three homes for sale, minus the new section that they're putting in right now. I don't know how many there are over there, but it has been very successful and provided a lot of homes for
mm-hmm. Okay.
One question to Roger, relative to a $100,000 home. Are they paying enough taxes to pay for the services that they receive?
If we were looking at a standalone home, let's take in the neighborhood like where you live in Ashton Oaks,
mm-hmm.
that $100,000 home in that area would not bring in sufficient taxes to pay for the services that are being provided. This is a little bit different in the fact that we have, you consider this as one home at $100,000, or a cluster that's $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, it's a little different. We are having Clemson, the Strom Thurmond Institute, should have a report to us, Ed, in the next probably 60 days as to the fiscal impact of what a home equivalency would be in relationship to the services that we provide. But like I said, this is a little bit of a different situation in that it's four homes clustering to one home.
It's higher density.
So a higher density could go ahead and it's going to pay for the services a lot more than if it's spread out mm-hmm. in a larger area.
How many square feet
correct.
Is each unit, or are they going to, is that going to vary as well?
I'm not sure. I imagine there will be some variation in square footage, but I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm. Are they like two bedrooms mainly, or?
Yes, I believe so.
The ones behind the mall are all two-bedroom homes.
Are they? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion?
We've
got a motion. We've got a second. All in favor? First reading passes unanimously. Thank you, John.
The next meeting is August 14th, John. August 14th. So you have plenty of time to get those drawings.
Item 2 under new business, Neighborhood Action Grant Program. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. We have discussed this on several different occasions. We've asked the staff to look at it again and to try to provide some information. They gave a map here that you have, which I understand it fairly well as far as looking at the census tracts, except when I look west of Whiskey Road and south of South Boundary, they're saying that a portion in there is over 46% low income, which, again, they're doing this just by census tract basis, so I'm not too sure. It could have some groomsmen and other stable type areas in there that is attributing to this. But in general, I think it displays quite well the low to moderate income neighborhoods of what you had asked would be considered for this grant. We did modify it to fit into these guidelines. So if you look at the second page, under item number 3, groups may receive up to $1,500 over a five-year period, or up to $2,500 if the city grant is matched dollar per dollar. You may want to change that. We used 45% as the in item number 2 as the threshold for those that would be able to receive the grant. Now, saying that, if Dunbarton Oaks had come before us, which is what precipitated this several months ago, you would have had to turn them down. They would not have been able to get the water tap. But at least once you have a set of guidelines to use, it's much easier for staff and for yourself to be able to say very easily, you just don't meet our criteria. So with that in mind, we bring before you these guidelines. If you would like us to modify them, we could still do that if you'd like to modify them. But otherwise, they're for your use. If you approve them tonight, then we'll let the various neighborhoods know of the new grant line guidelines that are available to them.
Okay, question on that. Number 3, groups may receive up to $1,500 over a five-year period or up to $2,500. If city grant is matched dollar for dollar, is that also over a five-year period?
That's what I would assume from this year.
Okay. All right. And so are we saying that anything under, let's see,
45%
or more or higher?
It's got to be 45% or higher of those that are in the low to moderate income neighborhoods, which is basically everything north of Richland Avenue fits in that criteria. Anything south of Richland Avenue, except for that one oddity there that I just, like I said, I couldn't understand. This comes directly from the...
Is that the 100.7?
The 46.1 west of Whiskey Road. It's where Palmetto Golf Course is at.
You got a 100.7 too then. What's that?
I'm not too sure if that's
more than 100%.
How many neighborhood associations are there?
There's 13 right now. Now, that when I say 13 that we recognize, there's homeowners associations like the group that recently came to us from Reflections, Hounds Lake Reflections, that asked for around $6,000. They're not registered with the city as a neighborhood association, but they are a homeowners association. River Bluff has a homeowners. Stratford Hall has one.
What are your requirements to be a neighborhood association?
They would come and have a president, vice president, secretary, treasurer.
Some type of a legal document.
And they have to meet on a regular basis, and then our staff works with them, and they're primarily all on the north side, except for the Gap is one. And Bill, is there any other ones that?
I have to say, frankly, that when this started, I thought it was a good idea to give a limited amount of money to almost any neighborhood that was interested in improving the looks of their neighborhood. I wasn't thinking of it being this is just my impression. I wasn't thinking of it being an ongoing project. I thought it would be a one-time thing, and if a subsequent city, if another city council wants to vote for more money for them, well, let them do it. But my feeling was that it would be max of $1,200 one time, and it would have to be a certified neighborhood association that worked with Lisa. And if it happens to be a neighborhood that They pay a lot of city tax if they've got this kind of a, you know, we could give back a little to some neighborhoods that are not, I mean, I think it should apply to all neighborhoods, in my opinion. But I think if, as long as we have some criteria for these neighborhood associations, then we won't have 300 of them or anything like that. And I don't want to see them be, I just want to see it be a one-shot deal. And if they want something fancier than what we're willing to do, then that would be money they'd have to get, you know.
Well, let me give you a good example of one that does not fit into the income category, and that's Aiken Estates. If you look at what Wistie Road and Silver Bluff is, it's they're anywhere from 18.5% to 21.8% income, according to the census tract. Well, they have a big entrance island by the Bethlehem Lutheran Church as you're coming off of Wistie Road, which has some landscaping in there, but it's not dressed up to any means. That if they wanted to put an irrigation system in, or they got a big sign there saying Hitchcock, what does it say?
Gosh,
does it say Hitchcock Woods?
Estates.
Estates. Thank you. I knew it wasn't Woods.
Thinking Estates, Hitchcock Woods.
And but they repair that every once in a while. If they wanted to come in, they would be able to get a grant to repair that sign. But they certainly would not be income eligible based on this criteria. But it's a recognized group, even though they're not attached to our neighborhood association. But on this criteria, they could still apply, but not with the 45% as a threshold.
I would have to say that I agree with Jane on this from the standpoint of I thought the whole idea behind putting together this program was not necessarily to help low-income areas, because I thought that there was already monies in place to assist them if they qualified financially. It was my understanding that this would be a grant to help existing older neighborhoods possibly bring their entranceway up to date as much as close as possible with the $1,200 to $1,500 that we would allow them to have. I too, like Jane, would like to see that this is done with a qualified or with a legal neighborhood association, and then they come and submit to the city. I think that would keep a lot of the people who do not have a legal neighborhood association from coming, or if they came, then either they would have to form the association prior to submitting for the funds. But you know, there's a lot of older neighborhoods out here that people have lived in this community for a long time and paid a lot of tax money in this city and helped out in this city a lot. And, you know, a lot of them now are on fixed incomes. But, you know, in order to upgrade the entranceway to that neighborhood, I think is better in our city. And I think if there's some way we could help them to achieve that, I feel like that's what we should do.
I agree with both Jane and with Don in what I originally thought we would be doing, but I'm looking at item number two, and if we're going to be using CDBG funds only for this, am I to assume that that you have to use these criteria, Roger?
No. This criteria is up to council. If you took out item number two, then we'd be making funds available through general fund money, and we'd just set aside X amount of dollars every year, say $15,000, that would allow you to have 10 grants.
So it wouldn't take away from the CDBG?
No. In fact, the recommendation of the neighborhood community neighbor development commission said that they would prefer not to use the money that we get through the CDBG, because then if we don't use that money, then more money is available for other things for the low to moderate income neighborhoods.
I know that we have older neighborhoods that don't meet the income guidelines, and I know that they're all over the city. And is there a way we could
I don't know, do something that would include those neighborhoods that don't meet income guideline by not using CDBG funds. I think it satisfied, it would satisfy both groups, maybe the committee that doesn't want you to use the CDBG funds. And it means that we would have to go into the city's tax monies to provide these grants, which is, which indicates that that's not being done here. These are CDBG funds that they're using.
And I think $1,200 is enough. I mean, I think 25 is too much. I really do. I would go back to what we spent in Dunbarton Oaks. It seemed to work for them.
If you eliminate item number two, then any association, including like Woodside or Stratford Hall or, you know, rich or poor, would be able to apply for those grants. Again, it's only $1,200. But again, I don't think once you open it up, you can't discriminate against one versus the other unless you tie to something, and that's why we have the income.
Let me say my thoughts here, and I thought the same thing y'all thought early on when we first started talking about this. I think there ought to be a limited pot of money to start with every year, whether it's $10,000 or whatever it is. I think anybody that gets any of that money, it's got to be based on need and priority. We just can't be giving money away. I would think our friends, the Krippners, would agree that Woodside does not need any of our money to decorate the entrance of Woodside. And if we open it up to everybody, then they would get some, or could get some. And I think everything we give should be on some formula for matching funds. Not necessarily 100%, but maybe it's city 100%, the organization 25% or something. Up to a certain limit, whatever that limit is. And I think it ought to be one time. I don't think it ought to be a recurring type thing. Now, if something comes up, there ought to be some flexibility. If something comes up in dire need and they need some more money, then they come before the community development group, and there would be some criteria there for determining just how much that need is or how bad that need is. But to me, that's the answer. Limited pot of money each year. The highest priorities get it based on need, and there'd be some formula for matching funds. When you give money away and they don't have to have any matching funds, then it doesn't mean as much. I know that.
I'm getting confused.
Did I thoroughly confuse you?
No, not what you said, just the whole
thing. Okay.
We had a program that was working for quite a few years using these community grants, and we had no problem with it whatsoever. We made a single exception for a good purpose at the time, which we all meant. If we're taking out two, does that mean we're going to kill the grant program as well? I'm a little confused here as to what we really want to do. It seems to me we had a grant program that was working just fine. It had criteria. We ought to continue using that. If we want to make a separate program for those who don't qualify and do it along the lines of what you and Jade are talking about, fine, but I don't think we can have one policy. It's going to be a two-policy thing, it seems to me.
I think where we probably need to draw the line is that we don't need to set up a fund whereby the development that might be approved next week might be eligible for funds to help them do signs. I think that if we're talking about older neighborhoods, I think we should talk about older neighborhoods. But if we're talking about blanket groups, then I would agree we need to scrap the whole thing because I think that is not what we want to do. I think we want to truly help those neighborhood associations that need help, not neighborhood associations that want to take advantage of the fact that because they're a tax-paying group that they should have the same access as the other groups. And so I don't know how to help you draw the line other than to say that if that's going to mess it up for those neighborhood associations that really need it, let's leave in number two and give it to this group of people. As it stands, it's coming out of CDBG funds, which is
which is legal, and at least we'll have this group taken care of. But I do think that there are other groups that should be able to get some help, and I don't necessarily mean a group like Woodside. I mean groups like the ones we've already helped. There might be another group out there that needs some help, and I think we should be able to help them. I think Crossland Park is another neighborhood.
Could we really just take that on? To really keep it down to the minimum, it seems to me then that it's probably something that ought to come to us on one at a time basis.
Yeah.
And we handle it.
And I think we could have council discretionary funds that we could help them from, that's aside and separate from funds that come in for the purpose of helping low-income neighborhoods.
For instance, we do have, and what started this whole thing was the Hounds Lake request. Didn't we have one from Reflections or something? Yeah.
Dunbarton Oaks started it, but Hounds Lake has heard about it. Aiken Estates now heard about it. We'll probably have in the next few months, 3, 4, 5.
But you know, I don't think we need to be afraid to look at their request and vote it up or down. I think we ought to look at it, and if it makes sense, if it has merit, then we ought to be looking at that. But if it's just someone coming in because someone else came in, we ought to look at that too.
Well, what's wrong with the 45%? We do that now with this
right.
City.
Right. We already do that.
Right.
Why don't we apply that to the whole city then, if you want to do that? Leave it that way. And we'll just have another fund of money, whatever it may be, that would go to a certain percentage. If you run out of CDBG and that's not enough, then maybe we have another few thousand dollars, 10, 5, whatever, that you draw on after you go through the CDBG. If we have those requests and they're still under 45 or over, or 45 and over. You've got a workable system, as Dick says. We've got a workable system now, I think, the way it's been working.
We certainly didn't have to deal with it before. It was working.
Well, that's right.
But I think what we have before us tonight works in conjunction with what we've been always doing. I think there were some concerns about the amount and how often they could get a grant. And so this cleans that up. Am I right on that, Roger?
Well, the reason you weren't getting people coming here asking for money is because when individuals would call us and say, we'd like to have money to put a water tap in, we'd like to have money to do irrigation, and if it was Aiken Estates or Dunbarton Oaks or Reflections, we said, no. Mm-hmm. Council doesn't provide money for those things. Never has, never probably will.
But we do provide money for landscaping. If you wanted to look at downtown neighborhoods in regard to the parks, I mean, they're
correct,
in the middle of neighborhoods.
But in these neighborhoods, like the Dunbarton Oaks or the Reflections or Aiken Estates, we had not up until that one time.
But when the Dunbarton Oaks people came, they had a modest proposal. They had a plan that we looked at. It seemed sensible. You know, then we decided to do it. I don't see why we couldn't do it that way from now on.
And when, after, you know, they had asked that evening for additional funding, possibly for the actual irrigation system itself, and within 48 hours, I got a call from them saying, tell you what, we'll buy the materials and install it ourselves. And so that's where that sharing, or that, as the mayor was talking about, that sweat labor plus they mm-hmm. provided mm-hmm. some real money collecting within the neighborhood, paid for part of that system, which to me, anytime you partner with it, it's going to be a much better project because they're buying into it mm-hmm. instead of just a giveaway program. So it's just something to think about if we're going to go ahead and continue with it in some fashion. How do you do that? Now, we could have the Reflections come in, we could have the other ones come in and talk to you if that's what you so desire.
I don't think we need that to happen. That's something we don't need, is everybody and their brother coming here asking for money. We need some firm guidelines that are clear and can substantiate, and this is the way it is. We're giving away taxpayers' money. And to me, it's got to be a need. It's got to be a real need. I question whether we should even be involved in this.
Well, I think when Dunbarton Oaks came, they had a real problem with their situation in that street.
Well,
they really did.
You can look at both sides of that issue.
I know you can.
If they all pooled their money, everybody put in $10 or something, they could have probably done what they did.
But I'd rather give it back to taxpayers.
But if the city's going to give them money, certainly people are going to come in here and ask for it.
I think the CDBG money is for what it's being used for.
Well, that's fine, and we've been doing that.
Right, and I think that this is a good proposal, and I think we should move forward with it. But I agree that how do we stop someone from coming before us? If they have a request for something, if a request comes to me and I ask Roger to bring it before council, does he say no up front, or do we allow it to come forward and we decide?
Item 7. I think this request should be approved by the Community Development Committee.
No, I'm for this one as it stands. I'm talking about additional requests.
When additional
neighborhoods not in the 45.
When additional requests come, you know, generally I try to let them know what the policy has been with City Council in the past.
They shouldn't come.
So, again, the one thing I try to do is, because if we already have some fairly firm policies, then the emotional part of that issue, when they come, you don't have to go ahead and deal with, because we already have those in place. So we have done a very good job, council has, in setting up policies so that people don't have to come. We already have things in place to let individuals know what they can or cannot do.
That's handled all the time with ordinances and what have you, and people want to do certain things. They may or may not understand the ordinance, and they call Roger or whoever, and he tells them what council has said, what the ordinance is, and that's it. Now, if they still want to come, we've never turned away anyone who wants
James
to come
Williams,
speak.
Who is here?
We'll listen to everyone, but hopefully, if you've got a policy, I think most people will say, okay, that's a policy. You're treated fairly with all citizens. So that's it. I won't come, or I will come, whatever the case may be.
And in that respect, then I got to say, I could support this as it's written. I think that's really, because I don't see any way. I just know, and in fact, I shouldn't speak about our fellows, but I know a guy who watches money so closely on our board that he would probably say, by golly, there's 1,500 out there, we're going to get it. And I think that would happen with others, too.
Sure. Now, excuse me, Dick, go ahead.
That's really...
I wanted to see the tie-in here between 2 and 3. 2 talks about a specific formula there, if you will. And then 3 says groups may receive. Now, does the word groups, does that refer to the groups
45%
in number 2?
Yes. The group.
Okay, it's not a separate group. So
no, it's the group in number 2.
Okay. So then that's saying that we're following this.
Right.
How often is this analyzed
and
changed?
Every 10 years.
Every 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, well, I support this.
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'd like to move that we approve the Neighborhood Action Grant Program as written.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any other discussion? We've had enough discussion?
Mm-hmm.
All in favor? Show of hands. Okay. Opposed?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
All right.
That passes 5-1. Okay. Item 3, selection of consultant for the North Side Comprehensive Plan. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. At the time that I wrote this memo, we did not have the final results from all the individuals that were doing the interviewing of this process. I now have those in front of you, but council has asked that we move as quickly as possible forward with the North Side Comprehensive Plan. James Holland, Holly Holland, who was here earlier, is going to be heading that up. You have made a selection of a number of other individuals. It's probably a 1 year and a half, 2 year process, because the area that we're going to be looking at is actually as large, if not larger, than the existing city of Aiken. So it's a quite a large area that we'll be looking at, and will involve a lot of time on the committee's part and our consultants.
We sent out a request for proposals. We received six different firms that submitted their proposals. Of that, then they narrowed that down to three, and four individuals heard from each of those three firms. And the firms are shown to be McBride Dale Clarion from Cincinnati, Jerry Weitz and Associate of Alpharetta, Georgia, and Wolpert from Charlotte. The committee met, ranked them, and the top two firms were almost identical in ranking. And the number one by just a few hundredths of a point was McBride Dale Clarion out of Cincinnati, and Jerry Weitz and Associate was just underneath that. In looking at it, I could argue it two different ways. I could argue and say that you go with the low firm of McBride Dale Clarion, which would make sense. Now, the other thing is Jerry Weitz and Associate is the firm that did the strategic planning process for the county of Aiken in the last couple of years. So they're very familiar with Aiken and Aiken County, and a lot of this, of course, is, well, almost all the property is outside the city. And so you can make an argument saying that they are familiar with our area, and therefore they would have some significant weighing factors in their favor. Right now, the recommendation, though, from Ed Evans that I got today was McBride was the firm, although if City Council wanted to choose Jerry Weitz and Associate, there would be some precedence in doing so. So we'd like to get a recommendation from you tonight so we can move forward with this, get them started so that when we have the final selection of committee members, which we should have the next week or two, we get started sometime in August.
Question, how would this be priced? Is this a firm price type of thing, or is it an hourly, or is it something else?
Ed, did you get into that at all? Typically, there's an upset maximum with these, and because you couldn't really go by an hourly. It's based on the amount of work that we anticipate right now, and then they always have the opportunity to make adjustments to it should the work be outside the scope. Again, we don't have a price, and that's going to be part of that negotiation process.
They all did give us a fee, an approximate fee of about $150,000. In that ballpark.
About $150,000 in that ballpark.
And the only way that that would change would be if the scope changes.
And what area is this going to cover?
It should cover our utility area that we're currently serving, which goes north of I-20, goes primarily to Highway 1, but in some areas it goes east of Highway 1. By about a mile, but then there's other areas along Highway 1, it just goes a few hundred yards. And then it'll go to Highway 19, and we do serve some areas on the west side of 19, but if you looked at the triangular area going I-20, 19 on the west, Highway 1 on the east, all the way down the city limits, would give you a pretty good idea of the area we're talking about.
Is Weitz the firm that did the connector road study?
No. Weitz is the firm that did the strategic plan for the county.
Now, when we did the strategic plan or the comprehensive plan for the rest of the city, we did it differently, did we not?
Ed, you want to answer that?
Strategic plan for the rest of the city.
The comprehensive plan that we went over for Aiken.
Yes, that was done by staff with a task force.
That's right.
There was no consultant involved in that.
Right.
And it was a much smaller area, so it was much more defined.
But there were many more people involved than there are going to be in this.
Right. Those particular areas, there was already a comprehensive plan. We were just updating the comprehensive plan on the south side, southeast side. This has never had a comprehensive plan done for this particular area.
Mm-hmm. If I could, Roger, one clarification or correction. It's McBride Dale Clarion that's involved with ACP.
Oh, is it the other way around?
Right. Jerry Weitz was not involved with the county.
Misunderstood your memo then.
Oh, so it's McBride that did the county?
Well, McBride Dale Clarion is really a separate firm, and they would partner with ACP. And ACP is the firm that did the county strategic plan, but they would cooperate in a joint venture, basically.
Okay, it seems to me that that would give them some advantage, having even the partnership there. They've got privy to all the materials that were done for the county, I'm assuming.
Right.
And they're low bid anyway, right?
Not low bid, they have the highest score.
Okay, they've got the highest score. So they would be number one on your list. That's what Roger told us.
Either McBride Dale, ACP, or Jerry Weitz would be fine. Either one would be good.
But McBride did have a slightly higher score.
What kind of information will we get from them after this? I mean, what will they give us?
Well, they'll give you a document that will be a policy statement about what ought to happen in that area, how it ought to grow, like the comprehensive plan now, and it will include maps of, you know, showing where growth should take place, where residential ought to go,
where
commercial
go.
Should go.
Where roads ought to go?
Right.
As
yes,
well.
That's part of the scope of work is to suggest the approximate locations of future roads.
And what were your criteria, just in general?
Well, I mean, I can read them to you if you want. But,
yeah.
Qualifications of the firm based on previous relevant experience and references. Qualifications of personnel to be involved. Quality of work is determined from both samples of work for similar projects and from the proposal itself. Demonstrated understanding of an approach to the project. Demonstrated experience in promoting public involvement and managing conflicting points of view. Clear indication that the work would be completed in a timely manner. And we gave those different weightings.
What do you think about this price?
It's pretty much what Ed and I discussed. Yeah. Even before we went out with the selection process, we had budgeted that kind of money. We knew it was going to be a very big job.
Have we ever used any of these firms before?
We have used Wilpert, but it was on storm drainage work, not on planning work.
Okay. I thought that name sounded familiar.
I thought that name sounded familiar.
Jerry Weitz would partner with Yeager and Associates from Gainesville, and Yeager and Associates did the original design guidelines for the historic district, which has now been replaced by the new version. But so we did work with Yeager 15 years ago.
So they've been in Aiken before, too.
Yes.
Okay. So they'll be partners with Whites.
Right.
If you selected Whites.
If you selected them, yeah.
But in fact, it sounds to me like the firm that has experience with Aiken County already, and you rate them just a little bit higher anyway. That was going to be my question, actually, because it sounded the opposite. And I said that didn't make much sense to me, but this does.
They're not going to make it any cheaper because they've already done this work for the county, are they?
I doubt it.
Well, they've already done it and got it mapped out and figured out what the recommendations are. You can hardly expect them to bring in contradictory recommendations. Do you like the county recommendations?
You know, I really haven't read the county's plan. I mean, that was not really a land use growth management kind of thing. There were some land use growth management elements to it, but this is a whole different level.
That was a zoning, right?
No, it was more of a, like the city strategic plan, it got into a wide range of issues.
It just looked to me when I saw the three companies that the one from Charlotte, North Carolina, maybe because the name sounded familiar to me, that them being so close to South Carolina, and then the one from Alpharetta, Georgia, would probably rank a little higher, but I didn't think a company from Cincinnati, Ohio would know a lot, but I guess it shows you how wrong you could be about
looking at
names and where they're from.
A lot of the work could be handled by the Clarion office in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Okay.
So we have one person in Cincinnati, but then the Chapel Hill office doing a lot of the work also.
Okay.
Well, it seems to me, since they're going to partner with the firm that did the work for Aiken County, certainly they're more familiar with Aiken County. They should be. Would you sit down with both of them, Ed? I mean, is this a logical procedure? Sit down with both of them, the top two, let's say, and say, okay, now we need to get to the details here. What's your scope, or how would you handle it? You've already talked about how you'd handle it, I guess, but okay, now what's your price? And in other words, get a bid from both of them. If you can't decide, I mean, if we can't decide and say, well, McBride Dale would be better because they're going to partner with this country, this company that has worked in Aiken County already, which sounds pretty good, assuming the prices are about the same. It seems like there ought to be an advantage there to me.
I think you'd have to have a list of things that they're going to do for you.
Yeah, as far as getting them in a bidding war of some kind, I doubt that would be a good thing. I'm not sure. Maybe it would.
Why not?
Well, you have sealed bids, don't you? I mean, you have sealed bid.
What normally happens in a professional contractual process is you would sit down with the firm that you feel could do the best work, and you negotiate a price out. If you find out that you cannot negotiate what you think is a fair and reasonable price, then you go to the second lowest, or the second firm. In this case, McBride had the highest point total, so typically we'd go ahead and take McBride, Dale Clarion, work them. If we felt like they were not working fairly or were not going to be charging us a price that was not, in our opinion, advantageous to the city, then we'd go to the next lowest person, which would be Wrights and Company. But we, to my knowledge, we have never gone ahead and said, okay, you two are both equal, now give us a price.
Well, just because we haven't done it before doesn't mean we can't do it, right? I would think that you would have some advice for us. You would have a recommendation, in other words, rather than give us three and have us sit here and talk like this. When we don't have a price, we don't really. We assume here that McBride's a few points ahead of the other two. So logically, why wouldn't you take it? I guess you could argue, why don't you take McBride? If you're not going to get into a bid from each one, then let's take McBride.
The recommendation and point total came from four people, you know, combining their ratings. I mean, if you're asking me what my first choice would be, it would be McBride Dale. Yeah. You know, Whites would be fine, but if I had to pick one, I'd pick McBride Dale.
Okay, well, I go with you. I support that.
But now, in other words, when we build something, we get competitive bids. But when we get consulting, we don't do that.
That is correct.
That's normally the way it is.
Is that right?
But it's like when we chose Steve Smith to do Rye Patch. We didn't go ahead to three architects and say, each of us
give
you three different prices, and we want the cheapest guy to do it.
Do you want to, it's like $150,000, though. We can assume it's not going to be much more than that or any more than that.
Yes, that's a safe assumption.
And it'll probably be over a year and a half to 2 year period, so it'll be in a couple of different budget years.
So having given out what we think it's going to cost, we should expect that they will at least be that. That's the minimum they're going to ask for, right? I mean, there's no chance they're going to ask for less than that, since we've already kicked out that figure.
Part of it's going to depend on what the final scope that we could work out for this project.
Okay.
We think we know what the scope is. It's such a large area. In our opinion, you can't land plan the area north of I-20 in the same way that you're going to land plan the area contiguous to the city, because the area contiguous to the city may be annexed and we'd have a lot more influence on it in the next 5 to 10 years. The area north of I-20, I don't know if we'll ever see that inside the city limits, because it's just so far away. It's 8 miles from the city limits right now.
You're saying north of I-20?
North of I-20.
We don't have a whole lot north of I-20.
We have water lines up there. We have some sewer up there.
Most of the land that we're talking about is between I-20 and
right. And I'm saying that the first couple of miles would probably be a lot more intense, you look at it, than the last couple of miles.
Yeah.
And there's 8 miles altogether.
Okay, we resolve this?
Go with Ed.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Do we have to have a motion, or?
Yes, we need a motion.
Okay, I'd like to move that we work with McBride Dale Clarion from Cincinnati, Ohio, to do the North Side Comprehensive Plan.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Okay, we added three items. Roger did. You want to take the demolition and the barn area?
Yeah, first, we have Bernadette Clayton here, Woody Millen's here, and they are representing the Aiken train track. Most of you either heard or read about the fact that some of the barns are in very poor condition. That's probably being very generous in saying that. They're ready to fall down. And they would like to see, if at all possible, that these barns would get torn down over the summer and hopefully get rebuilt before the fall season would begin. They are here to ask for some assistance from the City of Aiken now that they got approval Thursday night from the Design Review Board. And I gave you each the memo that Bernadette sent me last Friday.
Right. Would you like to speak, Bernadette? Or you want Woody to speak?
Good evening. I'm Bernadette Clayton from Johnston, South Carolina. I'm the treasurer of the Aiken Training Track. And as you all know, we did get approval for the demolition of the barns at the Aiken Training Track, and we would like to move as quickly as possible in getting these barns torn down and the new barns built. The fall training season begins October 1st, and we do have a timetable that we can work with to have the new barns ready for the fall training season. Our big concern right now is the hauling away of debris and getting that removed in a timely fashion, and we wanted to see if we could get the help of the city in getting this debris removed because of the fact that with the horses coming into town, we have the thoroughbred industry provides a great deal of support to the city and monetary benefit to the city. It's what makes Aiken Aiken. Aiken is thoroughbred country, and we want to make sure that we can continue to provide such a great facility that will continue to encourage the quality of horses coming to town. And we need to have the help of the city in getting this debris removed.
Bernadette, is this just one barn, so to speak, X number of stalls in that barn?
We're taking down three barns and moving the walking shed. The three barns that are coming down are the Post Barn, the Pump Barn, and the Grace Avenue Barn. The Grace Avenue Barn, at this point, we need to just have it come down. That is the one that the neighbors in that area are really unhappy looking at. That's in very serious shape. The other two barns are the ones that are coming down for the replacement with the new U-shaped barn with the 59 stalls.
Mm-hmm. So there's a sequence, then you take the Grace Barn down first?
We wanted to have them all come down at one time.
Okay. Yeah.
But to get the new barn up, we need the Post Barn and the Pump down Barn down quickly. But the Grace Avenue barn is the one that the neighbors really don't like looking at, unfortunately.
One of the reasons when Bernadette came to me a while back before this even went to the Design Review Board, it's kind of an unusual situation. We have been talking to a number of individuals in the equestrian community here, and the fact that council has talked about for a long time with our tourism industry and other things that are affecting right now the thoroughbred industry that's here. This is not a private individual that owns this property, but it's more of a cooperative situation that from my understanding, this property to really work effectively, they'd like to have around 250 stalls. Over the past several years, the number of horses that have been coming to Aiken has been staying even or declining somewhat, and because of the shape of the barns that are out there, not a lot of new horse owners want to bring their horses to Aiken. So we're kind of at a point in time that, in talking to Wooden and Bernadette, that if something's not done soon, this, I'm not saying it's the demise, but it really, something needed to be done, or the number of new horses are not going to come, and the more this continues, it's like a snowball effect. And so they came to us and said, we need to do something quickly now that we have this. Could you help us get the ball rolling so that we could then concentrate on getting the new barns up? And then I said, well, we have not done anything like this in quite some time. It's been probably at least a couple of years since councils authorized any demolition other than our Demo 200 program with the houses that we had. This was, again, one of those unusual requests. And so I wanted council to have an opportunity to hear this and to see if you would want us, because of the unusual nature, to help. The mayor asked me, what would this cost-wise involve? Currently, we have an agreement with the county that the homes that are in the Demo 200, or these dilapidated homes, the landfill accepts for free. Now, we have also had a few of the commercial places thrown in where they have not charged us. I don't know what they would do in this pure case. Worst case scenario is we might have to pay several thousand dollars for the landfilling of it. Best case scenario, all we pay for is the fuel of transporting it from that location to the landfill, and it takes us 2 or 3 days to do the hauling. So that's kind of like the two ends. One would be paying for fuel. The other end would be paying for some landfilling. So it's, again, it's however council would like to look at it, if you want to look at it whatsoever.
So the point is, this is actually a nonprofit organization that runs this.
The organization is its function is to maintain the track for the horses. It is not a profit organization.
And there are individual owners in town collectively who operate that.
It operates off of the track use fees paid for each thoroughbred that comes on the track to use the facilities.
If you had to charge more money for each horse or each thoroughbred that comes in order to raise the money to do this job, what would happen? They'd go somewhere else?
They would go somewhere else. We've just had two increases in the last couple of years. We just upped it again this year in preparation for the building. And we are going to have to do a rather substantial loan to do the building.
Right, right.
But your fees are generally competitive with
We just raised them in order to stay in a competitive.
We have to remember, I think, in whatever decision we make here, how important the equestrian community is to our community as a whole. I mean, there's millions and millions of dollars. I know 10 years ago there was an estimate of about $16 million brought into Aiken County. Now it's probably up to $50 million or something. I think I saw something else that was
there
more
was
like 60.
Done by state. There was a study done by the state, and the numbers were really quite amazing.
Yeah.
How much just comes into Aiken County alone.
Yeah. And I personally think that the city ought to support the equestrian community as much as we can. And, you know, what's fair, and we've done this for other folks, and if it would help them get these old places, and they're not going to get any better. They're going to get worse. Like you say, they're going to fall in. I've seen some of them.
They're not far from.
And if you don't have new stalls, you don't have horses.
Correct. When we lose those stalls, which we're at that point where people come and look at them, and they're not going to put the horses in. If we don't have new stalls for them, then we're going to lose the horses that could go in there. And what's happened is the barns surrounding the track that used to be owned by large-scale owners, they're not that way anymore. They've been sold, as people have passed on, they've been sold, and now they're in either other disciplines or, they're not being used for the thoroughbreds at the track anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we're running out of stalls. We're down quite a few.
Right.
And so the track has to go back and use the stalls that are there, and they're not usable.
Could we, Roger, talk a minute about how we would go about scheduling, and with, of course, Larry, too. I think Larry's here. How with the scheduling of helping them go? I mean, to some extent on what other made, if you had any emergencies or something like that, obviously.
These are why sometimes when you're reading the talk back and they say, why in the world does it take us X number of months to put up a fountain? Is because we do get involved in projects that we were not aware of when we start some of these other projects like this. And that's good. I really feel that's part of our job, is to serve those areas within the community that need help at that particular time. So what this would amount to, if, let's say, Woody came to us and said, in 2 weeks, we want to have those barns down, it mean that one of the projects that Larry has scheduled, let's say it's putting in some drainage on Pendleton Street to Hayne Avenue, some storm drainage, that might get moved back a week while they're going out there and pick up this material. Something would get delayed, but we've been doing this all the time with a number of other entities that we have worked with throughout our city. So it's just diverting manpower and equipment I don't know if it would take us 2 days or 5 days, but we're talking about days, not weeks, in hauling off this material, because we'd probably use two or three trucks to do it, so that their trucks would be just on a rotating basis coming through and being filled up.
How many houses have we torn down and hauled off? 45?
At least 200 or more. And then we've torn down several commercial accounts at various times.
Didn't hurt us yet.
And our city is better for that, too.
Right. I mean,
looks in every way.
Would it be possible for you to schedule a time?
We would have to. We'd have to sit down. If council says yes, then we would sit down with the Training Track Association folks and determine when they would be bringing that equipment in to knock down these barns. Mm-hmm. So that we don't want those barns to be sitting there for weeks, just because that would be worse than anything. And so we'd have to coordinate our scheduling on that.
I think you're not for profit. You're providing a service.
We're providing a service
to a very important industry in the city, and I think pretty much like we work with an industry that works with any other charity that helps the city out, I think we need to go ahead and do this. I feel we should do this.
Well,
I think it's that important. And I'd like to move that we go ahead and
I'll second.
And provide that help.
Okay.
And this is going to be ready by fall, you think, maybe, even?
If we can get the barns down.
Great.
The structure that goes up, it's a simple structure, so it's not like putting a house up. And horses really don't need sheetrocking and painting. And
that's a good thing.
No plumbing.
Well, a little bit of plumbing, because you need to be able to give them water and whatnot.
Yep.
Well, I think we all want that area to stay a horse area. And
yeah.
If it's going to stay a horse area, we got to have horses stapled there.
That's right.
And I went out and looked at it today. It won't take long to get them down.
Just go out and push. Okay, we've got a motion and a second. All in favor? Show of hands. Okay, passes unanimously. Very good. Thank you for what you're doing there, Burnett and Woody. Thank you, sir. Okay. Which one do you want to take?
The next item that I'd like to touch on is
a resolution. We, as one of our goals that council had in this year's agenda, was to try to obtain some funding from the federal government to help with the numerous transportation projects that are looming out there. These five projects that we are looking for help on, and you know, we may only get one, we may get two, we may get three, is the connector roadway from Whiskey Road to Silver Bluff. They just had their meeting last week, I believe, to finalize that. The connector road from Whiskey Road to Powder House, they're meeting later this week to finalize this. The widening of the bypass from US 1 to Pine Log Road, the widening of South Carolina 19 from the 118 to I-20, and improvements along Whiskey Road. I met with an individual that we're using to help us up in Washington, and he felt that the first step is to send a resolution to our two U.S. senators and the entire congressional delegation from South Carolina. That's, I believe, eight representatives. And we will then be asking the mayor and the county chairman, Ronnie Young, to be sending some letters. We're probably asking council. We're probably asking large landowners to be sending letters so that a file will be developing in each of these congressional folks up in Washington as to our need. So what I'm asking tonight is to pass a resolution recognizing that we have a need for this work, and asking that the South Carolina congressional delegation and the South Carolina state legislative delegation provide funding for these five roadways which I have named previously.
We certainly need to do this. So, and, you know, we're doing a lot of planning, and all the planning looks like it's in the county, but we have a good working relationship with the county on roads. But we can do a lot of planning, but then we get to the point where we need some money to implement the planning, and that's where the rub comes. So, as Roger said, this is where hopefully this will help. And Representative Clyburn's been trying to get Highway 19 widened for 20 years, 15 years, something like that, and I think he can be a big help to us too, and he said he would work toward that. So I'm sure he will, as much as he can. It's signed by everybody but Leslie, unless he's not here. So I thought
you only signed the top one.
Oh, there are three copies.
No, there are 10 copies.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I saw one copy.
I thought you were holding back until we make sure we all signed it.
Oh, no. There's no intention there. Honestly, I saw one copy for some reason. Okay, well, I think we all agree, and we can touch base with Leslie by phone, and then Sarah, you can sign for if she agrees or something. Maybe she'll come over and sign it. But this is so important to us. Okay.
Motion.
Okay, let's have a motion.
I move that we approve this resolution requesting funding.
Okay. I second it. Unless somebody else wants a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, Beverly, you second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Good. Okay, the last item, I think, has to do with posting for subdivision.
Subdividing a property. In this case, Jane Page Gunnell Thompson sent us some information back in May. Gary Smith sent a memo to you. Her original request that any time that a property was going to be subdivided, that it would be posted, and then the design review board or council would go ahead and decide if that was something that should be done. She was particularly concerned about the Horse District, Historic District, downtown area, where some of these larger properties that are, let's say, an acre or even a half an acre, and they're zoned RS-15, then be subdivided so they could take the old garden, subdivide it off, and create another property and then build on it. Mr. Smith sent back a memo to you all that was in the agenda package back in early June, basically saying legally it cannot go before City Council or the Design Review Board.
It could go before the Planning Commission, but back in the 90s, the Planning Commission said that they didn't want to really see these any longer, because when they were getting them, it was a perfunctionary matter that once they met the front footage and the size, legally you can't deny it. She sent another email to myself, actually to the mayor, with a copy to me today, and saying, okay, can we at least post it for a certain period of time so that the neighbors might know something about this, and it at least would make people aware of what's going on. Maybe they could even go to that person and talk to them and get them to reconsider, which, my understanding, Mr. Smith, we could go ahead and post it for 30 days before Mr. Evans would go ahead and sign the subdivision if council so desired.
I don't see a problem with doing that. I guess I'd be curious why that would be done. It would seem to open up the process to political pressure when, you know, Ed's guidelines now are, you know, does the requested subdivision meet the parameters that council's already given to him by virtue of the zoning ordinance? You know, the RS-15 zone requires a certain size lot and a certain foot frontage on the road and that sort of thing. If the proposed subdivision meets those requirements, Ed's really obligated to approve that subdivision.
Correct. And it wouldn't change what Ed's doing. It would just allow people to be aware of the actions that are taking place around them.
Would it mean that they would then show up at City Council? And after we have an hour's discussion, we would tell them that this is the ordinance and there's nothing we can do anyway.
But, you know, we might want to go back to rethinking some of this subdividing going before Planning Commission, because we never had the building pressure that I think this business has been going on in the last year or two in downtown Aiken is unprecedented as far as pressure to put as much as possible on as little land as possible because it's just so valuable. And that maybe we need to, I mean, that ordinance isn't set in stone either. You know, maybe we need to rethink that, because if we really want to, I don't know what the answer is right now, but I'm just, of course, the first thing that comes to mind, Don was just mentioning, is that thing on Forest Hills. You know, maybe if the neighbors had known that was going to happen, we could have kept that street being allowed. I don't know if we could have kept the street from being allowed or not, but that would have made a difference in the size of the structure because of the frontage of the property. You know what I'm saying? If I think there were questions that could have been asked before building started, if we had known. And I don't know, that just posting it, and maybe we could just post it now and then think about whether we do want, given the situation existing in Aiken right now, whether we really, I mean, we don't want to miss the boat here and lose our most beautiful areas because it's inconvenient for it to come to Planning Commission, because it seems like we're spending all of our time on, I mean, we need to spend time on new neighborhoods, but we also need to spend time on existing neighborhoods.
Absolutely. If that is a goal that you're trying to achieve, just changing the approval process is not going to get you somewhere. You would also have to change the zoning ordinance to create a new minimum lot size or something along those lines, but you would have to give guidelines as to what size lot you wanted to see and that sort of thing. And right now, state law prohibits you from denying a subdivision that is larger than 5 acres. That's correct. If council wanted to say that we would not approve a subdivision of a lot unless the subdivision resulted in 10-acre lots, state law would not allow you to pass that kind of an ordinance.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll do that.
If you're presented with an ordinance that would subdivide a large lot into a minimum of 2 5-acre lots, the city really has no jurisdiction to stop that subdivision from occurring.
But if it's less than 5 acres?
Less than 5 acres, you can talk about that.
1 acre going to 2 lots.
Correct.
Or 1 acre going to 4 lots.
But you would have to modify the zoning ordinance for minimum lot sizes and that sort of thing.
But we can do that.
if that's something you want to do.
And that's a real concern, is those smaller lots anyway.
They really are.
But understand that if you, once you look at, let's say, the lots in the historic area or the downtown area or whatever you're looking at, this would apply not only to those lots, but it would apply, unless you crafted it and create some kind of an overlay district, it would apply to something way on the south side of the city or way on the north side of the city that somebody might want to subdivide. And as, again, as long as it meets the legal lot size and the front footage
of the current zoning,
of the current zoning
area,
then we have no reason to not allow the subdivision to occur.
I still think, we ought to try to do something, and at the very least, we ought to let the neighbors know what's happening. Maybe they know the neighbor, you know, maybe they can talk to each other and get something that will... I just don't want to see what happened on Forest Hills happen, where all of a sudden this thing goes up and the neighbors don't know a doggone thing about it, you know, and that is just sad.
All I want you to understand is the neighbors may now know, but there still may not be anything that anybody can do
correct.
About the fact that
unless
they know about it.
Change the ordinance.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
That's right.
At least they can come and complain before it happens instead of after it happens.
Well, I don't want them just to waste time, but, you know.
Well, again, if they called, and let's say we posted it, and they called Ed's office or my office, and I've gotten some of those calls, and so has Ed, typically after the fact, all we could do is say, well, we're looking into it, and if it meets these requirements of the proper size and the front footage, we will, at the end of that 30-day period, administratively process their request. There would be no hearing. It would not go to City Council or anything else, because it would be a legal subdivision. But at least they would be aware of it.
In other words, if I have an acre of land now, I could subdivide that
into probably three lots, 1,500 feet each.
Depending on the zoning for the property.
Right.
15,000.
I guess that doesn't go into 1 acre. If you have a little over an acre, you can get three lots out of it.
I'm just thinking of a situation I think we could divide our lot and build a house in the backyard.
Probably could.
But I would think that the Thompsons in back of us, whose land is way right below ours, would sure want to know if a whole lot of grading was going, you know, since that looms right over their building. I mean...
Mm-hmm. And to you, it would make a difference, Jane. I mean, you'd be sensitive to their feelings. To others, may not.
Yeah, I know. That's why we.
And that's where the rub comes in.
That's really. Why we may have to do something by ordinance. I mean, I'd like to think we wouldn't, you know, but or at least get it to go to planning, so make it that it has to be approved by the planning.
Let me ask Ed Evans. Ed, do you know of any other city that has an ordinance situation that's better than what we have? You know, in other words, we talk about a change, perhaps. Change to what? I mean, how would we change it? Are you familiar with any other city that has something different?
Different cities do it different ways. Some send them off to the subdivisions. Some do it in this way.
Some do it what?
Administrative staff.
So they have to get Planning Commission approval?
Some do.
And we used to.
Right. How much effort would that be if we decided to go back to that?
How many a month are you right now signing off on, Ed, on the average, you think? 3, 4, 5?
More than that. I mean, you have some that are... taking one lot and splitting it in half. You have some that are 100 lots, you know, all sizes in between. The problem I see is that if you go to a 30-day waiting period, I mean, some we get now that are very simple, we can take care of in 3 or 4 days. You're going to make that person wait a month before you get a simple subdivision.
Well, maybe they should get started earlier, you know. I mean, what's a month? Come on.
The problem, a lot of people wait to the last minute, I think. If they knew that there was a process, I think they could probably plan for that.
Do you have a comment that you'd like to make?
Sure.
Come to the mic over here.
And while it's coming up, I would suggest to you that right now you have people that already know what the process is.
Yeah.
And they know they can bring it in and have it done within a week.
Oh yeah, sure.
And the change in the process is going to cause a lot of heartburn as well.
Well, how long does it take you to learn the process, though, and adapt to it? We adapt to all kinds of processes and speed limits and all these kind of things.
It's hard to hit a moving target.
Yes, sir.
Mark Thompson. Obviously, I feel like this is pointed pretty good at me. One of the projects that we've talked about with the 10 Downing deal is in the wraps and starting to be progressing through the processes. We got approval for the demolition of the two non-historic properties, and to be replaced with 5 units is what the Planning Commission agreed to. So any further processes and delays, this has been quite a lengthy deal already. We've started, I think, sometime in January with this, so it would not be that I wasn't aware of the process or that, but the process changing in the process is a problem for me.
Sure.
And I would, I think
that would affect you.
I don't know.
I think you.
We're not talking about changing in the middle of a project.
You'd be grandfathered anything that we're talking about today.
Well, it makes me nervous because I keep getting this from the same source, all these different proposals to changing amendments and regulations and things like this, and it starts to look like that this particular project has, it has been earmarked for some reason, and I just want to make sure.
I wasn't earmarking it at all. I hadn't even thought about what you're doing.
Has your subdivision been approved?
No.
But now that you've mentioned it,
I talked the last time. I mean, we've got some pretty good plans as far as what we're doing. But I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, my gosh, what are we doing now? We're going to have another program. So basically, isn't it at this point? I mean, if it meets the criteria, per se, as it is, whether it goes in staff or has to go before the Planning Commission, I mean, we understand we're going to have to do everything with the approval of the Design Review Board anyway. So, I mean, I'm not fighting that at all. We want it to be something nice and distinctly different, but make it look like Aiken.
I don't believe I was city attorney when Planning Commission approved subdivisions before, but my guess would have been that whatever advice they received would have been something along the lines of, as long as it meets the size criteria and the frontage criteria and that sort of thing, the subdivision has to be approved. If you don't approve it, the city could get in legal trouble. And I think that's why they said, if we're going to approve it anyway, why not just let Ed? I mean, Ed's smart enough; he can get his calculator out. He can figure out what the.
Well, all I was objecting to is that in this process now, at least for mine, is that now to come up with another set of criteria that turns around and says now we have to post and give the public 30 days to be notified or whatever. Is it just another step in the hurdle? I was just concerned about the rules changing. That's all I was.
You know how long it would take us to get this done?
Well, I've seen you move very quickly.
We're not talking about a moratorium and stopping everything right this point.
But we did it one time about 2 weeks ago, so that was another thing.
Who did?
This was brought up by the same source.
It may have been talked about.
Yes, but
you didn't see any action, did you?
No, I know, but I'm just saying it could happen.
But you're talking about property in a historic district where there's already going to be posting on the property, and you're going to have to present a design, and everybody that's interested can come and look at your design and all that kind of stuff. Really, where it's come up are in areas that are not covered by any of that, and neighborhoods where, surprise, surprise, we're going to cram another house on this lot.
Well, I don't think this one's a surprise, but I was just concerned about another step being added to the procedure. That's all. That's all.
I wouldn't worry, Mark. I wouldn't worry.
Mark has a...
Yes. Another Mark.
Mark Graham with Southern Partners. Fred, I was here when the Planning Commission decided not to continue to see subdivisions. And one of the things that was happening, it takes a tremendous amount of their time. And then they end up in the situation that Gary's talking about. They basically have to approve it anyway, unless y'all change some other rules and regulations. And so their time, they thought, was much better spent working with zoning ordinances and zoning changes and annexations and water and sewer outside the city, those things that they really have some teeth into it. Not that the subdivision doesn't, but like right now, if we have a subdivision, a preliminary plan that was approved, we used to have to do the preliminary plan, have it approved by the staff, bring it to the planning commission, and they had to approve it. Basically had to approve it because it had met all the regulations. And then once we built it and it was approved, we brought it back to the planning commission again, and they had to approve it because it was built according to what they had originally approved. And it was really using a lot of their time that they felt could be better spent on other matters. And if you add to that every minor subdivision of 2, 4, 6, 10 lots, almost every jurisdiction that I work in has a situation where you can, that staff, even if they still go to the planning commission on bigger subdivisions, they have it where smaller subdivisions can be done at the staff level, 10 or fewer lots and that type of thing. It really bogs the planning commission down and makes their meetings much longer. And they get frustrated because they have protesters.
Sure.
And they have to approve.
Right. I think anything, if we were to do something, it would have to involve the ordinance itself. But I don't, what we would do, that's what I don't know.
Well,
I don't know
effect,
how you would, what you would do.
In effect, you asked a question that didn't quite directly. I've looked at other cities around the United States, and there are many of them that have 1 acre or 2 acre zoned areas within the city. Now, what we would be in, I think, is we would have to rethink some of our current zoning, which basically is RS-15 mostly, and some that's about the biggest we go.
Right.
We would have to talk about rezoning properties upward, if you will, and I think we would get into a terrific battle. I think it's worth looking at, but that.
To me, it's the smaller lots that are the more important. It's not the bigger ones. It's the little ones.
No, Jane, I know of instances right now in town where someone has an acre or an acre, as you were just describing, for your own, where you take the back half of your property and create another lot of. What is the actual zoning overlay currently along your street? I don't know. What is it? Is it RS-15?
Probably 15.
I would think so, because that's what they laid over a lot of these districts. So unless we change that, I don't see how we could really eliminate or slow down this division of in-town lots.
I just wish we would post it. I really do. I think at least the neighbors would know. Perhaps they could talk with their neighbors and talk about what they're worried about. Perhaps there could be some give and take that wouldn't be awful. I mean, I don't think it all has to be that official, but I have a problem when someone comes to me and says, why didn't you let us know this was happening? Well, I didn't know it was happening. How would I know, you know? And
Mr. Porter.
Yeah. You know, Jane, the thing that concerns me is I just think that by posting this, we're going to create a lot of animosity between people, and we have no way of...
We got it now.
...calming that down. Well, it may happen after the fact, but before... and then them coming to council, as the mayor said, and wanting us to do something about it, and us pretty much saying, well, there's nothing we can do about it if it meets the qualifications. I think that we're going to create a lot of, I mean, if there was something that these people could really do ahead of time, short of going to that person and talking to them, but, you know, that may even create a really worse scenario between neighbors than...
Well, they might come to us and say, don't let them create that road so that they get extra frontage so they can build a much bigger house. And we could do that. We could...
I don't know. Can we?
That particular case, I think we were gulled, frankly, into doing something we should not have done.
Well, I think you're right. I think we didn't ask. Hindsight, 2020.
But if that road had been...
There were questions we could have asked, and obviously we didn't feel like we got all the information, but we didn't ask all the questions either.
But in fact, the applicant also blindsided us by not telling us up front what he planned to do.
Well, no, and we should have put it legally in our agreement that this remained part of that property. We didn't do it. Nor were we advised
again,
to do it.
As the mayor says, it's unfortunately hindsight, but I think once bitten, twice shot.
Yes, sir.
I do a lot of development in Aiken County and many different jurisdictions. And just for example, one jurisdiction in Richmond County, that we have to submit our plans and we have to go to the Planning Commission for final plat approval and to the City Council. And what happens is it gets placed on a consent agenda, and they'll have 15 final plats on one agenda, and they vote on it one time, and it takes the staff has to do the same amount of work. They have to put the package together and put it in a package, and it takes time away from their days to do this. That's something that gets voted on in a matter of 5 seconds. And like one of y'all said, if it complies with the current regulations, it kind of just adds another step to getting your subdivision approved. And it has caught us in some jurisdictions where we've had a good selling neighborhood and we've started the next section under construction, and we got delayed for weather reasons or some other reasons, and we'll sell out of a particular section and have another section that we've been delayed. We get finished and we miss a deadline by a day or two. We have to wait another 30 days, and it does put a lot of people out of work to wait another 30 days. I mean, you got your frame, you know, as far as the home building process, it really hinders a lot of jobs. And doing it the way y'all do it now, I think it's a fantastic way, because we're complying with the regulations, and we can just move right along, and we create jobs for the county and the different municipalities we're in. I think, you know, your staff does a fantastic job of doing it, and I would encourage y'all to keep it the same way. It works very, very well.
I don't think it ever hurts to let people that are paying taxes to the city of Aiken know what's going on in their neighborhood. I don't see how that can be a bad thing. I really don't. I think if you have a wonderful house, you care very much what happens around you. And I think I can't understand how it can be bad to let people know what's happening. I just don't. I think that we have so many citizens that care about this town, and letting them know what's going on is just terribly important.
Is there a way that when they come to the city to apply for the subdivision, that they could post it at that time, not say for 30 days, but just until it's, I don't know, don't we have a mechanism to send letters out when things are going on around a neighborhood? But we already have.
I mean, we could do whatever council asks us to do. We used to not post properties for annexations and
right.
rezonings and all these other things either. But, you know, we started doing that at the request of council. You know, you have a few options available to you. One, you could do just what we've been doing, which is nothing. You could post it, and we continue the process just as Ed does it now, which means he posts it. He would then sign off after X number of days and letting them know, you know, if citizens call, there's nothing we could do other than we're just informing you what's about to happen. The third avenue is to have it go before a planning commission, but again, going back to history, mm-hmm. the planning commission just said, please don't do that anymore, because it takes up a lot of our time to go through X number of these subdivisions at these meetings, and we can't, even if we don't want to do it, we have to do it anyways. So the question is just, do you want to inform the public of what is going to transpire after X number of days? Now, again, if you want to do it for 10 days, you can do it for 10, 20, 30, or not at all. Currently, we're not doing it at all.
But I guess it makes sense to do it if there is recourse for the neighbors. But in this case, if all you're doing is subdividing a lot, which is legal and which is something we virtually can't stop because it's in the ordinance already, I don't know what good sending a letter would do, but I certainly think that I would like to know some of these things myself as a person in a neighborhood, but I don't know what the best way is to do that if there is no recourse for the individual who gets the letter that says, I'm going to build a barn on my lot in the back of my yard, and so I'm subdividing. What can my neighbors do about it?
I guess one thing we could do is publish the sign, or post the sign, if you will, and also really have a line right down there that says this will be automatically approved after 10 days under current city regulation.
Really, can we stop it can we stop it after 10 days, though?
Well, we could put it 10, 15, whatever.
I'm saying it isn't something we can stop anyway.
No, it's not. No, unless you change.
All we're doing is just informing, and so the letter to the neighborhood could be that this person has applied, and this is for your information, just a kind letter that says, here's what's going on. Even though we can't stop it, you're just letting them know it's going to happen.
But then
it's information.
But if you do it by letter, however, where you draw the line? How many letters are they going to have to write? How many problems?
Well, you're only... I don't know. I don't know what you can do if you can't stop the process.
Yeah.
If it's inherent right, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I guess the basic question is, all of us as homeowners, would we want to know what's going to be going on next door to us?
Yes, that's really
what. And maybe across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, maybe it doesn't matter quite as much. But I, Jane, I can see your point very, very well. I can see Don. So there will be some that will get so upset over certain things, I guess, it will end up coming to city council. And we'll just talk it out, and this is the ordinance. Now, if we're really serious about this thing, we've got to change the ordinance in some fashion. But I would like to know if my neighbor is going to do something, just for general information.
I wouldn't want to know.
I think that in that sense, in due deference to God, some are going to complain, and they may come ahead of time.
Yeah.
Is it better to have them come ahead of time and have it explained, or after the fact?
And Dick, I like your idea of putting down there in bold print somewhere
a disclaimer
that says, hey, they can do this. This is just for information.
FYI.
Something. Yeah. Letting the neighbors know that this has been applied for.
For your information only.
I don't see anything wrong with that. Posted for what, 10 days maybe? Whatever. Mr. Wade Brody probably has the answer to all of our dilemma here.
I sure do.
Okay, let's hear it.
422 York Street. You're making a mistake if you post this thing for two reasons. One, you're creating additional controversy. It's all going to end up in your lap without a doubt. The other thing is you're slowing the commercial process. By whatever time limit you put on this.
Well,
and it's not going to mean one iota because the commercial process is going to take place. Now, if you want to change the situation, go back and change your ordinance.
Well, that's the ultimate. I mean, that's it. The thought would be not to slow down the process.
Right. 10 days, 15 days.
You'd have to figure that out so that you don't really slow down the process.
And actually, I think we have to distinguish. We've been beating this around so much. I don't know how much of this, what we're really talking about are the infill type of things that are taking place rather than stuff that's new project development in other areas. So isn't that really...
Yeah.
So I think we could define it that way and actually keep it within the inner city, if you will, where we're going to publish something at least so that the neighbors know. The neighbors living out the new project know what's going to happen.
I do think we need to do some investigating, though, and see what a reasonable
rezoning type of...
What would be reasonable? I mean, we can't rezone everything in town. I don't want to do that, and I don't think that's what anybody wants. But I just know that if that property on Forest Hill had been posted, we wouldn't have had to allow that.
Well, it's just what priority you want to put it on. Again, it's that, like, an action agenda. You know, as far as the rezoning or looking at changing the regulations, I think that's a great issue to discuss when we get look at the next action agenda. Again, staff has numerous things to consider right now, and so is the Planning Commission. If you want to look at just posting, again, we could look at just that. But as far as actually changing the regulations at this point in time, that I would suggest to council that at just the beginning of the year, 6 months from now, we're going to be sitting down with the Planning Commission again and going through their priority, and you can fit in where you want to do that, if you want to do that at all. The other thing is, as was stated, if we're going to do this, I don't want to see Ed's staff going out there and putting up 20 of these signs every month. You know, if we could go to a particular area that you're interested in, maybe the historic district or some defined area, that would be a lot more reasonable, and we could see how it then works for a period of time.
Would it be unreasonable to say the area currently within the city limits so that new areas that are being proposed would not be included?
Again, that's a very large area, and we'd probably have 10 to 20 of these signs we'd be putting up every month. If you're concerned about, you know, I think the original concern was the historic area, and if that's what you're really concerned about, or those coming under the design review board, we now at least would have a defined area. And you could try it that way for 6 months and see how you like it. Or don't do it at all.
I just want us not to do anything that pushes us over any closer to further regulating how people deal with their own property.
This would certainly delay the process by X number of days.
We must always be careful of that, because we know what takings legislation and all those other things are going to do if we ever push in that direction. And I just want us to think about what will happen when people feel like we're telling them what to do with their personal properties.
The administrative process that Ed and his staff goes through, as he stated, generally 2 to 5 business days he'll complete his process. You know, they have to go ahead and get the request, and they have to go ahead and make sure that the property is of the size and frontage, etc. But once that's verified, it's just a simple writing out a signature on Ed's part to go ahead and complete that subdivision. So anything longer than a week's time would delay the process by individuals to some degree. Now, for some of those, it doesn't really matter, because they've been planning this for a long period of time. For others, that could delay it.
Well, Mayor made a point, though, that you, I mean, if you know you have to plan for 15 days or 30 days, you plan for 15 days or 30 days. I don't know. I just think people need to know what's happening, and I don't like it when things happen. I mean, someone said to me, isn't your job to be sure that my property values aren't diminished too? I mean, isn't that part of your job as well as protecting somebody else's property rights?
You know, we spend a lot of time communicating. We're always looking for different ways and better ways to communicate with our citizens, and we've come a long way in that. And this, you know, the water bill, the letter that comes out in the water bill every month, that is a great way. I think it's our best way, personally, that we can communicate, because you can put so much on that one piece of paper back and forth. But I'm not so sure we ever are doing wrong by communicating with our citizens. as long as they know the rules, we're straight with them, we're telling them these are the facts, we're advising you in this case, we're advising you that an application for subdivision has been submitted, but you need to know that the ordinance allows this. But we just wanted to inform you. And again, I would want to know what's going to happen to on the side of my house. Now, that property owner can say to me, it's none of your business. This is my property. So I don't have to tell you what's going to happen. I can do whatever the ordinance says. And that's true, too. So we've got this thing. What's more important? Letting people know what's going on in the neighborhoods? Or not? And then something happens and something goes up and the lot's divided and all of a sudden you've got something that nobody likes. Of course, they couldn't have stopped it anyway. I know that. But you know, there's a lot of strength in neighborhoods. And when neighbors get together, we saw this in our neighborhood not too long ago when someone very close to me, our lot, wanted to put horses on that lot. And they had every right to ask for it, but there were a number of letters sent out. And I'm not saying there wasn't some animosity established through that process, but the homeowner decided, no, it's not worth it. I don't want to go through this. I'm moving to another area, but I don't want to leave this neighborhood with the feeling that I've done something that they don't want. You know, there weren't horses on this Burgundy Road, and there are going to be horses on the Burgundy. I did not say one word about it, but there were some neighbors that were very outspoken about it, and therefore they didn't do it. Now, they have bad feelings about it? Maybe they do have bad feelings about it, but at least the neighbors had a chance to know, and they spoke out.
Well, I would certainly vote for the openness of this, if we can.
Let me make this suggestion, because there's a lot of discussion, a lot of thoughts on this. You cannot make this approval tonight. It needs to go to the Planning Commission, get their thoughts, the process. Anytime we go ahead and change the subdivision regulations, it goes through the Planning Commission first. Now, Council could go ahead and originate that request, which, based on your discussion tonight, I could go ahead and ask the Planning Commission to consider this and to discuss it. They may come back to you and say 30 days is great. They may come back with 15 days. They may come back with, we think this is a bad idea. But I would suggest that we allow the Planning Commission to give input, and based on their input, and let's say they decide that posting is a good idea just so that the neighbors would know about it. Then we could bring it back to you in an ordinance form. There would be a public hearing held at their level, and then you would vote it one way or the other, change whatever fashion you want. But according to the state regulations, anything of this nature would still need to go through the Planning Commission. The only reason I brought up tonight was this has been discussed by several of you on more than one occasion as to things that are happening, and I wanted to get a sense from you as to what direction, if any, you want to go. If you didn't want to approach it at all, that's fine. If you want to look at something, we can look at it. I think I have enough information from you tonight. I'll go ahead and talk to Ed Evans, and we'll get something before the Planning Commission later this summer, early fall, and get some decision back to you.
Okay, I think that's a good
procedure. Okay. Anything else? If not, we are adjourned.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's the process. I like that process. I mean,
just get their thoughts.
And we do.
And we need their thoughts, too.
The more thoughts we have, the better job.
Well, if there's no right or wrong answer.